Would I have gone to the higher authorities, the department chair, dean, or human subjects committee, to blow the whistle on it? I can't say for sure, and I'm glad it never came to that. But in retrospect, that action would have been essential in translating my values into meaningful action. When one complains about some injustice, and the complaint only results in cosmetic modifications while the situation flows on unchanged, then that dissent and disobedience are not worth much. She expands on a point that was raised in our discussion of the Milgram research, where it was argued that verbal dissent was only ego balm for the teacher, to make him feel better about the terrible things he was doing to his learner. Behavioral disobedience was necessary to challenge authority. However, in the Milgram experiment case, there was never disobedience more significant than a silent retreat as each teacher perpetrator exited from the distressing situation without changing it in any meaningful way. Christina's take on what the heroic minority should have done after they opposed the authority figure has never been framed so eloquently. What did it matter to the classic original Milgram study that one-third of the participants disobeyed and refused to go all the way? Suppose it was not an experiment. Suppose Milgram's cover story were true, that researchers were studying the role of punishment in learning and memory and would be testing about 1,000 participants in a host of experiments to answer their practical questions about the educational value of judiciously administered punishment. If you disobeyed, refused to continue, got paid, and left silently, your heroic action would not prevent the next 999 participants from experiencing the same distress. It would be an isolated event without social impact unless it included going to the next step of challenging the entire structure and assumptions of the research. Disobedience by the individual must get translated into systemic disobedience that forces change in the situation or agency itself, and not just in some operating conditions. It is too easy for evil situations to co-opt the intentions of good dissidents or even heroic rebels by giving them medals for their deeds and a gift certificate for keeping their opinions to themselves. What is the stuff of heroism and heroes? When does a person who engages in an action that qualifies as a heroic act, on the basis of criteria we will lay out next, not become a hero? Further, under what circumstances might her or his act be considered not heroic, but cowardly? Christina's action had the positive consequence of terminating a situation that had spiraled out of control and began to do more harm than had been intended at its inception. She does not consider herself a hero because she was simply expressing her personal feelings and beliefs that were translated, by me as principal investigator, into the outcome she desired. She did not have to blow the whistle to higher authorities to intervene in order to stop the runaway experiment. Compare her condition to that of two potential heroes in that study, prisoner Clay 416 and prisoner Sarge. Both of them openly defied the authority of the guards and suffered considerably for doing so. Clay's hunger strike and refusal to eat the sausages challenged the guards' complete control and should have rallied his peers to stand up for their rights. It did not. Sarge's refusal to utter public obscenities despite the harassment by guard John Wayne also should have been viewed as heroic defiance by his peers, and rallied them not to yield to such abuse. It did not. Why not? In both cases, they acted alone, without sharing their values or intentions with the other prisoners, without asking for their support and recognition. Therefore, it was easy for the guards to label them troublemakers and to brand them as the culprits responsible for the guards' deprivations of the rest of the prisoners. Their acts could be considered heroic, but they cannot be considered heroes because they never acted to change the whole abusive system by bringing other dissidents on board. Another aspect of heroism is raised by their example. Heroism and heroic status are always social attributions. Someone other than the actor confers that honor on the person and the deed. There must be social consensus about the significance and meaningful consequence of an act for it to be deemed heroic, and for its agent to be called a hero. Wait, not so fast. A Palestinian suicide bomber who was killed in the act of murdering innocent Jewish civilians is given heroic status in Palestine and demonic status in Israel. Similarly, aggressors may be construed as heroic freedom fighters or as cowardly agents of terrorism, depending on who is conferring the attribution. This means that definitions of heroism are always culture-bound and time-bound. To this day, puppeteers enact the legend of Alexander the Great before children in remote villages of Turkey. In the towns where his command posts were set up and his soldiers intermarried with villagers, Alexander is a great hero. But in towns that were simply conquered on his relentless quest to rule the known world, Alexander is portrayed as a great villain more than 1,000 years after his death. What is more, to become part of any culture's history, a hero's acts must be recorded and preserved by those who are literate and who have the power to write history or to pass it on in oral tradition. Poor, indigenous, colonized, illiterate people have few widely acknowledged heroes because there is no record of their acts. Defining heroes and heroism. Heroism has never been systematically investigated in the behavioral sciences. Heroes and heroism seem to be best explored by literature, art, myth, and cinema. Multiple data sources document the ills of human existence: homicides and suicides, crime rates, prison populations, poverty levels, and the base rate of schizophrenia in a given population. Similar quantitative data for positive human activities are not easy to come by. We don't keep records of how many acts of charity, kindness, or compassion occur in a community in the course of a year. Only occasionally do we learn of a heroic act. Such apparently low base rates lead us to believe that heroism is rare and that heroes are the truly exceptional. Nevertheless, renewed interest in the importance of addressing the good in human nature has arisen from the new research and empirical rigor of the positive psychology movement. Spearheaded by Martin Seligman and his colleagues, this movement has created a paradigm shift toward accentuating the positive in human nature and minimizing psychology's long-held focus on the negative. Currently accepted conceptions of heroism emphasize primarily its physical risk, without adequately addressing other components of heroic acts, such as nobility of purpose and nonviolent acts of personal sacrifice. Emanating from the analyses of human virtues by positive psychologists is a set of 6 major categories of virtuous behavior that enjoy almost universal recognition across cultures. The classification includes wisdom and knowledge, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence. Of these, courage, justice, and transcendence are the central characteristics of heroism. Transcendence includes beliefs and actions that go beyond the limits of self. Heroism focuses us on what is right with human nature. We care about heroic stories because they serve as powerful reminders that people are capable of resisting evil, of not giving in to temptations, of rising above mediocrity, and of heeding the call to action and to service when others fail to act. Many modern dictionaries describe heroism as gallantry or bravery, and these in turn are described as courage, and courage returns us once again to heroics. However, older dictionaries were at pains to break down the concept, offering subtle distinctions among words used to describe heroic acts. For example, the 1913 Webster's Revised Unabridged Dictionary associates heroism with courage, bravery, fortitude, intrepidity, gallantry, and valor. As part of the entry for each of these words, the dictionary's editor tried to ensure that the reader understood how they differed. Courage is that firmness of spirit and swell of soul that meets danger without fear. Bravery is daring and impetuous courage, like that of one who has the reward continually in view and displays his courage in daring acts. Fortitude has often been styled passive courage and consists in the habit of encountering danger and enduring pain with a steadfast and unbroken spirit. Valor is courage exhibited in war against living opponents and cannot be applied to single combat. It is never used figuratively. Intrepidity is firm, unshaken courage. Gallantry is adventurous courage, which courts danger with a high and cheerful spirit. The dictionary goes on to elaborate in footnote examples that a man may show courage, fortitude, or intrepidity in the common pursuits of life as well as in war. Valor, bravery, and gallantry are displayed in the contest of arms. Valor belongs only to battle. Bravery may be shown in single combat. Gallantry may be manifested either in attack or defense. But in the latter case, the defense is usually turned into an attack. Heroism may call into exercise all these modifications of courage. It is a contempt of danger, not from ignorance or inconsiderate levity, but from a noble devotion to some great cause and a just confidence of being able to meet danger in the spirit of such a cause. Military heroes. Historically, most examples of heroism have emphasized acts of courage that involved bravery, gallantry, and risk of serious physical injury or death. According to the psychologists Alice Eagly and Selwyn Becker, the combination of courage and nobility of purpose is more likely to result in someone being considered a hero than just courage alone. The idea of nobility in heroism is often tacit and elusive. Generally, the risk of life and limb or of personal sacrifice is much more conspicuous. The heroic ideal of the war hero has served as a theme from ancient epics to modern journalism. Achilles, commander of Greek forces in the Trojan War, is often held up as an archetypal war hero. Achilles' engagement in combat was based on his commitment to a military code that defined his actions as gallant. Yet while his acts were heroic, his overriding motivation was the pursuit of glory and renown that would make him immortal in the minds of men after his death. The historian Lucy Hughes Hallett argued that a hero may sacrifice himself so that others might live, or so that he himself may live forever in others' memories. Achilles will give anything, including life itself, to assert his own uniqueness, to endow his particular life with significance, and to escape oblivion. The desire to risk one's physical being in exchange for lasting recognition across generations may seem a relic from another era, yet it still warrants serious consideration in our evaluation of modern heroic behavior. The historical view of the hero also suggests that there is something innately special about heroes. Hughes Hallett wrote, "There are men," wrote Aristotle, "so godlike, so exceptional, that they naturally, by right of their extraordinary gifts, transcend all moral judgment or constitutional control. There is no law which embraces men of that caliber. They are themselves law." One definition of heroism arises from this Aristotelian conception. It is the expression of a superb spirit. It is associated with courage and integrity and a disdain for the cramping compromises by means of which the unheroic majority manage their lives, attributes that are widely considered noble. Heroes are capable of something momentous: the defeat of an enemy, the salvation of a race, the preservation of a political system, the completion of a voyage, which no one else could have accomplished. This concept of conspicuous service that distinguishes a warrior from his peers persists to this day in our military services. The U.S. Department of Defense recognizes heroism by awarding a number of medals for acts considered to be above and beyond the call of duty. The highest of these is the Medal of Honor, which has been awarded to about 3,400 soldiers. Rules governing the Medal of Honor emphasize the role of gallantry and intrepidity, the willingness to enter into the heart of a battle without flinching that clearly distinguishes the individual's performance from that of his fellow soldiers. Similarly, the British military awards the Victoria Cross as its highest medal for heroism, defined as valorous conduct in the face of an enemy. The ideal of the military hero is clearly echoed in other contexts, and it includes those who routinely risk their health and lives in the line of duty, such as police officers, firefighters, and paramedics. The insignia worn by firefighters is a version of the Maltese Cross, a symbolic acknowledgement of the creed of heroic service that Knights of Malta were sworn to live by in the Middle Ages. The Maltese Cross, in its original form, remains a symbol of gallantry for the military in the British Victoria Cross, and from 1919 to 1942, in the U.S. Navy's version of the Medal of Honor, the Tiffany Cross. Civilian heroes. If Achilles is the archetypal war hero, Socrates holds the same rank as a civic hero. His teaching was so threatening to the authorities of Athens that he became the target of government censure and was eventually tried and sentenced to death for refusing to renounce his views. When we equate the military heroism of Achilles with the civil heroism of Socrates, it becomes clear that while heroic acts are usually made in service to others or the fundamental moral principles of a society, the hero often works at the nexus of constructive and destructive forces. Hughes Hallett suggests that the wings of opportunity are fledged with the feathers of death. She proposes that heroes expose themselves to mortal danger in pursuit of immortality. Both Achilles and Socrates, powerful exemplars of heroism, go to their deaths in service of the divergent codes of conduct by which they chose to live. Socrates' choice to die for his ideals serves as an eternal normative reminder of the power of civil heroism. We are told that at the hour of Socrates' sentencing, he invoked the image of Achilles in defending his decision to die rather than to submit to an arbitrary law that would silence his opposition to the system he opposed. His example brings to mind the similar heroism of the U.S. Revolutionary War patriot Nathan Hale, whose defiant dying stand will later be used to illustrate one type of heroic action. Consider the daring deed of the unknown rebel who confronted a line of 17 oncoming tanks that were aimed at smashing the freedom rally of the Chinese democracy movement at Tiananmen Square, Peking, on June 5, 1989. This young man stopped the deadly advance of a column of tanks for 30 minutes and then climbed atop the lead tank, reportedly demanding of its driver, "Why are you here? My city is in chaos because of you. Go back. Turn around and stop killing my people." The anonymous tank man became an instant international symbol of resistance. He faced the ultimate test of personal courage with honor and delineated forever the proud image of an individual standing in defiance against a military juggernaut. The image of that confrontation was broadcast around the world and made him a universal hero. There are conflicting stories about what happened to him as a consequence of his act, some reporting his imprisonment, others his execution, others his anonymous escape. Regardless of what became of him, his status as a civil hero was acknowledged when the Tank Man was included in the list of Time magazine's 100 Most Influential People of the 20th Century. April 1998. The physical risk demanded of civilians who act heroically differs from a soldier's or first responder's heroic acts, because professionals are bound by duty and a code of conduct, and because they are trained. Thus, the standard for duty-bound and non-duty-bound physical risk heroism may differ, but the style of engagement and potential sacrifice the action demands is very similar. Civilian heroes who perform acts that involve immediate physical risk are recognized in awards, such as the Carnegie Hero Award in the United States and the George Cross in Britain. British and Australian authorities also recognize heroic actions that involve groups. For example, Australia recognized a group of students who tackled and restrained an armed offender after a crossbow attack on a fellow student at Tomaree High School, Salamander, New South Wales, in 2005, by awarding a group bravery citation. The citation is for a collective act of bravery by a group of persons in extraordinary circumstances that is considered worthy of recognition. Once again, a seemingly simple concept is broadened from the behavior of a solitary hero to that of a collective hero, which we will consider shortly. Physical risk heroes versus social risk heroes. One definition offered by psychologists cites physical risk as the defining feature of heroes. For Becker and Eagley, heroes are individuals who choose to take risks on behalf of one or more other people, despite the possibility of dying or suffering serious physical consequences from these actions. Other motives for heroism, such as principle-driven heroism, are acknowledged but not elaborated on. It seems curious that psychologists would promote so narrow a prototype of heroism and exclude other forms of personal risk that might qualify as heroic acts, such as risk to one's career, the possibility of imprisonment, or the loss of status. A challenge to their definition came from the psychologist Peter Martens, who noted that it singled out only heroes who stood for an idea or principle. The nobility component of heroism that betokens the Aristotelian hero among the proletariat. Senator John McCain, himself a hero, who resisted giving any military information in spite of being subjected to extreme torture, believes that the concept of heroism might be broadened beyond physical risk and suffering. McCain contends that the standard of courage remains, as I think it should, acts that risk life or limb or other very serious personal injuries for the sake of others or to uphold a virtue. A standard often upheld by battlefield heroics, but one that is certainly not limited to martial valor. Each of these descriptions of heroic behavior equates the characteristics found in physical and civil heroism while pointing out critical differences between them. The various conceptions of heroism also roughly map onto ideas of courage, justice, and transcendence that Seligman and his colleagues developed as part of their classification system for virtues and strengths. For example, the virtue of courage is erected on four character strengths that include authenticity, bravery, roughly similar to intrepidity, persistence, similar to fortitude, and zest. Justice is noted as another virtue. Fairness, leadership, and teamwork are subsumed within this virtue. In practice, the concept of service to a noble cause or ideal is often ultimately a matter of justice, for example, the abolition of slavery. Finally, transcendence is another of the virtues that touches on heroism, insofar as it is the strength that forces connection to the larger universe and gives meaning to our actions and existence. While not articulated in the literature on heroism, transcendence may be related to Webster's 1913 conception of fortitude in heroic behavior. Transcendence may allow an individual involved in a heroic act to remain detached from the negative consequences, anticipated or revealed, that are associated with his or her behavior. In order to be heroic, one must rise above the immediate risks and perils that heroism necessarily entails, either by reframing the nature of the risks or by altering their significance relevant to higher order values. A new taxonomy on heroism. Stimulated by thinking about the heroic behaviors associated with the Stanford Prison Experiment, I began a fuller exploration of this intriguing topic in dialogues with my psychology colleague, Zeno Franco. We first broadened the conception of heroic risk, then proposed an enhanced definition of heroism, and finally generated a new taxonomy of heroism. It seemed apparent that risk or sacrifice should not be limited to an immediate threat to physical integrity or death. The risk component in heroism can be any serious threat to the quality of life. For example, heroism might include persistent behavior in the face of known long-term threats to health or serious financial consequences, to the loss of social or economic status, or to ostracism. Because this broadens the definition of heroism considerably, it also seemed necessary to rule out some forms of apparent heroism that might, in fact, not be heroic, but pseudo-heroic. In his book, The Image, A Guide to Pseudo-Events in America, Daniel Boorstin deflates the modern confluence of heroism with celebrity. 2 centuries ago, when a great man appeared, people looked for God's purpose in him. Today, we look for his press agent. Among the ironic frustrations of our age, none is more tantalizing than these efforts of ours to satisfy our extravagant expectations of human greatness. Vainly do we make scores of artificial celebrities grow where nature planted only a single hero. Another example of what heroism is not can be seen in a children's book on American heroes that offers 50 examples. Its stories of heroism actually point to a group of activities or roles that are necessary but insufficient to warrant true heroic status. All of the examples are role models upheld as worthy of emulation, but only a fraction meet the definitional requirements of hero status. Not all mavericks, warriors, or saints are heroes. The hero must embody a combination of deliberate nobility and potential sacrifice. Sometimes individuals are accorded hero status when not deserved by their actions, but they become so for some purpose of an agency or government. These pseudo-heroes are media creations promoted by powerful systemic forces. Heroes are rewarded in various ways for their heroic deeds, but if they anticipate secondary gain at the time of their act, they must necessarily be disqualified from heroic status. However, if secondary gains are accrued subsequent to their act, without prior anticipation of or motivation to attain them, the act still qualifies as heroic. The point is that a heroic act is sociocentric and not egocentric. Heroism can be defined as having 4 key features. A. It must be engaged in voluntarily. B. It must involve a risk or potential sacrifice, such as the threat of death, an immediate threat to physical integrity, a long-term threat to health, or the potential for serious degradation of one's quality of life. C. It must be conducted in service to one or more other people or the community as a whole. And D. It must be without secondary, extrinsic gain anticipated at the time of the act. Heroism in service of a noble idea is usually not as dramatic as physical risk heroism. However, physical risk heroism is often the result of a snap decision, a moment of action. Further, physical risk heroism usually involves a probability, not the certainty, of serious injury or death. The individual performing the act is generally removed from the situation after a short period of time. On the other hand, it might be argued that some forms of civil heroism are more heroic than physical risk forms of heroism. People such as Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., and Dr. Albert Schweitzer willingly and knowingly submitted to the trials of heroic civil activity day after day for much of their adult lives. In this sense, the risk associated with physical risk heroism is better termed peril, while the risk involved in civil heroism is considered sacrifice. Sacrifice entails costs that are not time-limited. Typically, civil heroes have the opportunity to carefully review their actions and to weigh the consequences of their decisions. Each might have chosen to retreat from the cause he championed because the cost of his or her actions had become too burdensome, yet they did not. Each of these individuals risked their quality of life on many levels. Their activities had serious consequences: arrest, imprisonment, torture, and risk to family members, and even assassination. Returning to Webster's 1913 definition of heroism, we may say that upholding the highest civil ideas in the face of danger is the core concept of heroism. Taking physical risk is only one means of meeting the dangers that can be encountered in performing heroic acts. We're reminded that heroism is a contempt of danger, not from ignorance or inconsiderate levity, but from a noble devotion to some great cause, and a just confidence of being able to meet danger in the spirit of such a cause. The danger may be immediately life-threatening, or it may be insidious. Consider one of Nelson Mandela's statements at the beginning of his 27-year-long imprisonment for opposing the tyranny of apartheid. During my lifetime, I have dedicated myself to the struggle of the African people. I have fought against white domination, and I fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die. Based on this more flexible definition of heroism, Zeno Franco and I created a working taxonomy that includes 12 subcategories of heroism, distinguishing 2 subcategories within the military physical risk heroic type and 10 subcategories within the civilian social risk type. In addition, the taxonomy identifies discriminating characteristics of each of the dozen hero types, as well as the form of risk they encounter, and gives a few examples drawn from historical and contemporary sources. The taxonomy was developed a priori, based on reasoning and literature reviews. It is neither empirically grounded nor fixed, but is rather a working model that is open to modification by new research findings and readers' qualifications and additions. It will be obvious that the subcategories, definitions, risks, and exemplars offered are all deeply culturally and temporally bound. They reflect a largely European-American, middle-class, adult, postmodern perspective. Incorporating other perspectives will surely expand and enrich it. Category: Military Heroism, Gallantry, Bravery, Valor. Subtype 1: Military and Other Duty-Bound Physical Risk Heroes. Definition: Individuals involved in military or emergency response careers that involve repeated exposure to high-risk situations, heroic acts must exceed the call of duty. Risk, sacrifice. Serious injury, death. Exemplars: Achilles, Medal of Honor recipients, Hugh Thompson, Admiral James Stockdale. Category: Civil Heroism. Subtype 2: Civil Heroes, Non-Duty-Bound Physical Risk Heroes. Definition: Civilians who attempt to save others from physical harm or death while knowingly putting their own life at risk. Risk, sacrifice, serious injury, death. Exemplars: Carnegie Heroes. Category: Social Heroism, Fortitude, Courage, Intrepidity. Subtype 3: Religious Figures. Definition: Dedicated lifelong religious service embodying highest principles or breaks new religious spiritual ground. Often serves as a teacher or public exemplar of service. Risk, sacrifice. Sacrifice of self in ascetic path, upsetting religious orthodoxy. Exemplars: Buddha, Muhammad, St. Francis of Assisi, Mother Teresa. Category: Social Heroism, Fortitude, Courage, Intrepidity. Subtype 4: Politico-Religious Figures. Definition: Religious leaders who have turned to politics to effect wider change, or politicians who have a deep spiritual belief system that informs political practice. Risk, sacrifice. Assassination, imprisonment. Exemplars: Mohandas Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, Reverend Desmond Tutu. Category: Social Heroism, Fortitude, Courage, Intrepidity. Subtype 5: Martyrs. Definition: Religious or political figures who knowingly, sometimes deliberately, put their lives in jeopardy in the service of a cause. Risk, sacrifice. Certain or near certain death in the service of a cause or ideal. Exemplars: Jesus, Socrates, Joan of Arc, Jose Marti, Steve Biko. Category: Social Heroism, Fortitude, Courage, Intrepidity. Subtype 6: Political or Military Leaders. Definition. Typically lead a nation or group during a time of difficulty. Serve to unify nation, provide shared vision, and may embody qualities that are seen as necessary for the group's survival. Risk sacrifice, assassination, opposition, being voted out of office, smear campaigns, imprisonment. Exemplars, Abraham Lincoln, Robert E. Lee, Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, Vaclav Havel. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 7, adventurer, explorer, discoverer. Definition, individual who explores unknown geographical area or uses novel and unproven transportation methods. Risk, sacrifice. Physical health, serious injury, death, opportunity costs, length of journey. Exemplars, Odysseus, Alexander the Great, Amelia Earhart, Yuri Gagarin. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 8, scientific discovery heroes. Definition, individual who explores unknown area of science, uses novel and unproven research methods, or discovers new scientific information seen as valuable to humanity. Risk sacrifice. Inability to convince others of the importance of findings. Professional ostracism. Financial losses. Exemplars, Galileo, Edison, Madame Curie, Einstein. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 9, Good Samaritan. Definition, individuals who step in to help others in need. Situation involves considerable disincentives for altruism. May not involve immediate physical risk. Risk sacrifice. Punitive sanctions from authorities. Arrest, torture, death, opportunity costs, ostracism. Exemplars, Holocaust rescuers, Harriet Tubman, Albert Schweitzer, Richard Clark, Richard Rescorla. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 10, odds beater, underdog. Definition, individuals who overcome handicap or adverse conditions and succeed in spite of circumstances and provide model for others. Risk sacrifice. Failure, rejection, scorn, envy. Exemplars, Horatio Alger, Helen Keller, Eleanor Roosevelt, Rosa Parks. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 11, bureaucracy heroes. Definition, employees in large organizations in controversial arguments within or between agencies, typically involves standing firm on principle despite intense pressures. Risk sacrifice. Jeopardize carefully groomed career. Professional ostracism. Loss of social status. Financial losses. Loss of credibility. Risk to health. Exemplars, Louis Pasteur, Edward Tolman, Barry Marshall. Category, social heroism, fortitude, courage, intrepidity. Subtype 12, whistleblowers. Definition, individuals who are aware of illegal or unethical activities in an organization who report the activity without expectation of reward. Risk sacrifice. Jeopardize carefully groomed career. Professional ostracism. Loss of social status. Financial losses. Loss of credibility. Physical reprisal. Exemplars, Ron Ridenour, Cynthia Cooper, Colleen Rowley, Deborah Layton, Christina Maslach, Joe Darby, Sharon Watkins. A sampling of hero profiles. Putting some flesh on the bare bones of heroism both humanizes the conception and illustrates its many forms. I will profile a dozen individuals that are particularly interesting or that I know personally. Having argued that situations make heroes, we can use some major situational markers to cluster some of them, such as apartheid, McCarthyism, Vietnam and Iraq wars, and the Jonestown mass suicides murders. Apartheid heroes. At the vanguard of efforts to promote freedom and human dignity are special kinds of heroes who are willing to engage in lifelong battles against systemic oppression. In recent times, Mohandas Gandhi and Nelson Mandela took heroic paths that led to their engaging and dismantling two systems of apartheid. In 1919, Gandhi began passive resistance to Britain's authority over India. He was imprisoned for 2 years. Over the next 20 years, he struggled for the liberation of India, for equal treatment of members of the Hindu caste system, and for religious tolerance. World War II delayed the advent of India's self-determination, but in 1948 the country finally celebrated its independence from Great Britain. Gandhi was assassinated shortly thereafter, but he became the exemplar of enduring nonviolent resistance to oppression. South Africa developed a formalized, legalized apartheid structure in 1948 that prevailed until 1994 and that virtually enslaved the native black population. Nelson Mandela was tried for inciting strikes and protest meetings and on other charges in 1962. He spent the next 27 years incarcerated in the notorious Robben Island prison. During the time he was imprisoned, Mandela and his fellow political prisoners used the prison system itself to create both a real and symbolic resistance situation that served to galvanize the people of South Africa and the world to end the system of apartheid. He was able to transform the self-generated identities of several generations of prisoners by leading them to understand that they were political prisoners acting with dignity to support a just cause. But in the process of doing so, he helped to transform the attitudes and beliefs of many of the guards, and to challenge the entire prison system as well. Anti-McCarthyism heroes. The menace of global communism was from the 1950s until the 1989 fall of the Berlin Wall what the fear of global terrorism is now. It dictated national policy, it fomented wars, and it entailed an enormous waste of resources and lives. It is important to remember McCarthyism because it was a form of repressive, authoritarian, quasi-government control that occurred in a mature democracy. Those who diffused the anti-communist hysteria, propelled by Senator Joe McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee in the United States, never received the enduring, universal recognition that Gandhi or Mandela enjoyed. Nevertheless, their opposition to injustice meets our definitional criteria. At the height of the McCarthy era, the University of California initiated a loyalty oath that all faculty members were required to sign. A psychology professor, Edward Tolman, refused to sign the oath and led a small group of professors who opposed the policy. On July 18, 1950, Tolman submitted a letter of protest to the president of the University of California, Robert Sproul. In August of that year, the regents of the University of California fired 31 professors, including Tolman, for their refusal to sign the loyalty oath. Later that month, the professors filed suit for reinstatement under Tolman versus Underhill. In 1952, the state Supreme Court found in favor of these non-signers. During the loyalty oath dispute, Tolman encouraged other young faculty members to sign the oath and leave the fight against it to him and others who could financially afford to continue the struggle. Tolman, a soft-spoken academician with no prior history of political involvement, became deeply respected for his courageous stance by many professors and staff in the University of California system. Other heroes of the McCarthy era included investigative journalists such as George Seldes and I.F. Stone, and the cartoonists Herb Bloch and Daniel Fitzpatrick. During this period, I.F. Stone's name was listed on a Senate Internal Security Subcommittee list of 82 most active and typical sponsors of Communist Front organizations. As a consequence of being blacklisted, Stone was forced to sue in order to get his press card. Moving from the imaginary communist menace that faced the United States to the palpable daily menace and cruelty of national domination by a communist regime, we meet Vaclav Havel. Havel is extraordinary in the sense that the Dalai Lama is, and is ordinary in the sense that a former stagehand and writer is. However, he was the architect of the Velvet Revolution that toppled the Czech communist regime in 1989. Before finally convincing the government that its totalitarian brand of communism was destructive of all that Czechoslovakia stood for, Havel was imprisoned repeatedly for nearly 5 years. He was a leading figure in drafting the Charter 77 Manifesto and organizing the Czechoslovak human rights movement of intellectuals, students, and workers. As a passionate supporter of nonviolent resistance, Havel is famous for having articulated the concept of post-totalitarianism, which challenged his countrymen to believe they had the power to change a repressive regime that they inadvertently upheld by passively submitting to its authority. In letters he wrote from prison to his wife, and in speeches, Havel made it evident that the first step in overthrowing an unacceptable social and political order is for citizens to realize that they are comfortably living within a lie. This unpretentious, shy man was made president by the Federal Assembly, and when the communist government finally yielded to the power of the people, Vaclav Havel was democratically elected the first president of the new Czech Republic. He continues now, as a famous private citizen, to oppose political injustice and to support efforts for global peace. Vietnam War Heroes. Two very different kinds of military heroism under conditions of extreme duress appear in the actions of James Stockdale and Hugh Thompson. Stockdale, a former Stanford colleague at the Hoover Institute and guest lecturer in my course on mind control, rose to the rank of vice admiral before his death at 81 in July 2005. He is considered by many to be one of the clearest examples of military heroism in the 20th century for having endured extreme torture sessions repeatedly over 7 years of imprisonment and never giving in to his Viet Cong captors. His key to survival was relying on his earlier training in philosophy, which enabled him to call to mind the teaching of the Stoic philosophers, notably Epictetus and Seneca. Stockdale's focus enabled him to distance himself psychologically from the torture and pain that he could not control and galvanize his thinking around those things he could control in his prison surroundings. He created a self-willed code of conduct for himself and others imprisoned with him. Survival under conditions of extreme trauma requires that one's will never be broken by the enemy, as when Epictetus was tortured by Roman rulers thousands of years earlier. Hugh Thompson is distinguished for his extreme courage in a nearly lethal battle against his own soldiers. One of the most terrible events in the history of the U.S. military was the My Lai Massacre, which took place on March 16, 1968, during the Vietnam War. An estimated 504 Vietnamese civilians were rounded up and killed in Son Mai Village, My Lai 4 and My Ki 4, by American soldiers and their Charlie Company officers, Captain Ernest Medina and Lieutenant William Kelly, Jr. In response to military losses from ambushes and booby traps, the military command issued an order for the destruction of Pinkville, a code name for a communist Viet Cong village. Finding no enemy warriors there, the soldiers gathered up all the inhabitants of the village, elderly men, women, children, and babies, and machine-gunned them to death. Some they burned alive, raped, and scalped. While this massacre was unfolding, a helicopter, piloted by Warrant Officer Hugh Thompson, Jr., which was flying overhead to provide air cover, sat down to help a group of Vietnamese civilians who appeared to still be alive. As Thompson and his two-man crew returned to their helicopter after having set smoke signal markers, they saw Captain Medina and other soldiers running over to shoot the wounded. Thompson flew his helicopter back over My Lai village, where soldiers were about to blow up a hut full of wounded Vietnamese. He ordered the massacre to stop and threatened to open fire with the helicopter's heavy machine guns on any American soldier or officer who refused his order. Although the commissioned lieutenants outranked Thompson, he did not let rank get in the way of morality. When he ordered that the civilians be taken out of the bunker, a lieutenant countered that they would be taken out with grenades. Refusing to back down, Thompson replied, "I can do better than that. Keep your people in place. My guns are on you." He then ordered two other helicopters to fly in for medical evacuation of the 11 wounded Vietnamese. His plane returned to rescue a baby he had spotted still clinging to her dead mother.